And from the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. We're going to have open lines for you at the end of the program tonight. I'm going to do something special tonight because this hour, did the ancients set up a warning system to help us avoid a future apocalypse? Guest Paul Leavitta explains, including some Hopi prophecy as well. Here's some of the news of the day, though. I want to bring you up to speed on a lot of things that are going on. Advisen, LTD, it's a company, has estimated that worldwide insurance and reinsurance losses related to three major hurricanes that hit the United States this year could amount to $57.6 billion. It's a lot of money, making the cumulative catastrophe losses the largest on record. By predicting unreported losses from State Farm Mutual Automobile Insurance, for example, which is the largest personal lines insurer, as well as unreported and unfiled losses elsewhere, Advisen projects pre-tax insured losses per hurricane, $40 billion for Katrina, $6.4 billion for Rita, $10.8 billion for Wilma. The losses amount to more than twice the annual total for other U.S. natural disasters and one and a half times the losses from the 2001 terrorist attacks in New York and Washington. A disabled man who was injured when a windblown tree crushed his trailer in the state of Washington killed himself as he lay trapped in the wreckage on Christmas Day. The injuries that Richard Payne suffered when the tree fell early Sunday were not life-threatening. The cause of death was a self-inflicted gunshot wound. It did not appear that Payne had any means of summoning help or getting away. According to a sheriff's spokesperson, Jan Smith, saying in a statement that there was no phone in the trailer, no nearby neighbors in the remote wooded area. Payne was 52 years old on disability. He had been living in the trailer on family property for about a year. A tree was on him. He couldn't get out. He just felt that was his only way out. In Afghanistan, a top Taliban commander said more than 200 rebel fighters were willing to become suicide attackers against U.S. forces and their allies, a claim dismissed as propaganda by Afghanistan's government, which said the hardline militia was weakening. In Baghdad, municipal employees working on a sewage project in the Shiite holy city of Karbala found skeletal remains believed to be from a mass grave dating to 1991. What did they find? The grave may contain over 100 victims, including women and children, of a brutal crackdown by Saddam Hussein's regime following a Shiite uprising in the south after Desert Storm. In New York, a 67-year-old woman put her husband in a suitcase after he died at the Upper East Side apartment they lived in and left him there until neighbors finally noticed some kind of an odor coming out of the apartment. Police arrived at the woman's apartment and found her 87-year-old husband stuffed in the suitcase. The woman appeared confused about how long her husband had been dead. No charges against her. She was going to take him to Arizona because that's where he wanted to be buried. Strange story out of Florida. Jeff Reardon, some of you may know him if you're into sports, was one of the top relief pitchers in baseball history. Charged with robbing a jewelry store, then blamed his arrest on medication he was taking for depression. The 50-year-old Reardon retired since 1994. He's number six in career saves all time. Walked into a jewelry store, handed an employee a note saying he had a gun and the store was being robbed. Reardon, who starred with the Montreal Expos, Minnesota Twins, Boston Red Sox, and a number of other teams, including the Mets, fled the store with an undisclosed amount of cash. He said the medication that he has been on made him do it, and he apologized. He's lived in the city for 20 years, never had any problems, and quite frankly, he earned more than $11.5 million during his career, and people say he did not have financial problems. A friend of mine telling me a story today of one of their pets ingesting a poinsettia. It's poisonous. They saved the animal, but it got very, very sick. Just a word to those of you who have pets and you have this plant lying around the house because of Christmas, be very, very careful. Christmas, by the way, if you go onto the coasttocoastam.com website, a cinnamon bun. Take a look at that hot story. Not a hot cinnamon bun, which bears a striking likeness to the late Catholic nun Mother Teresa, was stolen from a coffee house on Christmas Day. The owner arrived to find that the famous flaky pastry had vanished from the top of the Nashville, Tennessee store. The culprit was apparently angry over the display. The nun bun has drawn tourists since it was preserved and put in a glass case at the shop. And quite frankly, if you do go to the coasttocoastam.com website and look at hot stories, you will see that it does indeed look like the late Mother Teresa. Now, in a moment, a very special guest, Paul LaViolette. We're going to talk with him about some stunning, riveting theories and his opinions on the cosmos, Earth Under Fire, the talk of the galaxy, and Genesis of the cosmos in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, his name is Dr. Paul LaViolette, and he is a scientist and a darn good one. He has authored 4 books and has published numerous articles in professional scientific journals. He received his BA in physics from Johns Hopkins University, his MBA from the University of Chicago, his PhD in systems science and astronomy from Portland State University, and he's the president of Starburst Foundation, which is a scientific research institute. Dr. LaViolette, his findings open a new pathway to the interpretation of our ancient past. Aided by his background in general system theory and physics, he's been able to successfully decipher the lost science said to be encoded in the lore of the tarot and astrology, and he has done just a magnificent job in some of the theories and opinions you are about to hear tonight. Paul, I've got to tell you, I was watching your videos in compliment to the books, and I was just glued to what I was seeing and hearing about these theories. How long have you been working on this?
Oh, many years, decades.
How did you come across this? I mean, something obviously sparked your interest many years ago for you to begin to say, you know, there's something else out there in the cosmos. There's something that's affected this planet. How did you then push yourself in that direction?
Actually, I was coming from physics. It may sound unusual to be discovering something like this, studying physics. But I was developing a new theory in physics because, being curious, I wanted to understand better what was going on in the universe, and was actually developing a systems approach, I was taking ideas from systems theory, which has now come to be quite well established in many fields, but it hadn't been applied to physics at that time. And as I was going through this, as a friend said, geez, your theory sounds a lot like what's in the tarot. And that's what sort of introduced me to the ancient traditions, and I saw indeed that these concepts that I was developing were encoded there, and one thing led to another. I found that astrology, which is another system of its encoding concepts metaphorically, also encoded this science. And then it was like one discovery after another. I began to realize that the constellations, which astrology is basically 12 constellations along the ecliptic, were pointing out the location of the galactic center. And as I understood what it was saying, metaphorically, through its symbolism, it was indicating that the center of our galaxy had exploded on a certain past date. And at that time, I was in the PhD program at Portland State.
Okay.
And I had been planning before that to be developing my new physics theory that I had been working on. But when I made this discovery, that sort of went on the shelf. I figured this was much more important. Here was something that astronomers and geologists had totally missed. It was a phenomenon that affects the Earth periodically in a very big way, and which has been the source of the ancient legends about the Great Flood, the burning of the Earth, the dark sky where the sun is blotted out or the stars are blotted out, earthquakes, global earthquakes.
And what astounds me, Paul, is the work that you've done by picking up some of the ancient myths of civilizations that apparently had some knowledge of this. And that's what's pretty perplexing. I mean, the Hopis and a number of other civilizations on this planet all talk about some catastrophes that have occurred way before they existed. How did they know about this?
Yes, so they apparently were handing down the knowledge from distant past. And you find this tradition being passed down in all cultures. It's just, it seems that Western society has, or modern scientific society we live in, has sort of disbelieved what the legends are saying. They didn't have a category to interpret them. So it's been, actually, there was a reaction against interpreting, for example, geology was a reaction against the theorists that were trying to find a cause or evidence for the Great Flood, who were coming from religious background. And geology grew out of the opposition of that and developed the glacial theory, which was more of a very slow, progressive type of agent that would try to explain a lot of the geologic formations. So there was this sort of reaction against catastrophism in science.
Now, Paul, the Hopis, for example, they've talked in their history of three worlds that came before this one. And we're now in what they would call world number four. They talk that that each of those other three worlds ended when a blue star appeared. Now, on the face of it, somebody would say, all right, what do we mean by a blue star? But you go on to explain, and then when you go back and look at Hopi prophecy, it makes sense. The blue star we're talking about really has to do with the center of the Milky Way, this nuclei within this galaxy, right?
Right. When the galactic core erupts, it would give off a bluish white light, just like in the myth they talk about, or in the legend. In effect, you would see a star brighter than any other star in the sky. It would probably be visible during the day. So there would be almost like two suns, but this would be sort of a point of light in the sky.
And this heats up galactic dust, which could be devastating to us.
Well, yeah, in a way. What it does is it's actually a wind of cosmic rays that have arrived. The light is produced from the cosmic rays. It's called synchrotron radiation.
Okay.
We discovered it in the particle accelerators when they were observing. They saw this bluish white light coming from the electrons. And that's what happens when electrons are slowed down. They give up a lot of their kinetic energy as this bluish white light, which is actually all frequencies, radio waves on up to X-rays and gamma rays. And it would be beamed in the forward direction that the particles were traveling. And when you see the bluish white light, that means that the superwave, as I call it, has already arrived. And superwave being the cosmic rays released from the center of the galaxy, which is 23,000 light years away from us.
And that arrives really without warning then, doesn't it?
Exactly, yeah. Now, think of this superwave. It's traveling essentially at the speed of light. So when it arrives, when we become aware of it, it's already at our doorstep. you see reference to the day of the Lord in the Bible arriving like a thief in the night. And okay, that really describes this.
And then according to Hopi, then, if you interpret it this way, you think this this cosmic explosion in the center of the Milky Way, which sent this wave our way, has happened already three times, at least?
At least you can see from the repetition of this, you look at the past and see how many times, what was the period between these, and you can kind of project that at least two of these on their way right now towards us.
Already?
Yes, it's just we don't know when the closest one's going to arrive.
Okay.
Although you get predictions about catastrophes coming up soon, thing is that we don't really know.
There have been
predictions that have something was going to happen at the turn of the century that never panned out.
What about the Mayans, Paul? Their 2012 calendar. Could this be anything that has to do with a cosmic wave?
Sure, very possibly. If you look at the beginning of the Mayan calendar, the exact date slips me, but it was around 3000 BC. You find a small event occurring about that time. If you look at the glacial ice record, and the thing to look for is beryllium 10, which is produced in the atmosphere when cosmic rays strike the atmosphere.
And you were one of the few people to get some ice core samples, weren't you?
I was the first to get them from Russia.
Okay.
That was sort of introducing the U.S. Soviet ice core exchange program.
I understand.
But a lot of scientists have been analyzing ice from both North and South Poles. A lot of times I use other people's data. I've done my own research on ice for my PhD work, which was to test this theory. I was looking for cosmic dust in the ice age period. Some of the other work is relating to the cosmic rays, the beryllium 10 profile. I was taking other people's data there. And if you look at that, you see distinctive peaks. Now, I had actually been predicting this in the thesis in my dissertation, and later this data came out to show, in fact, that there were these peaks. And judging from the periods, you can figure the period between these events, but it's not regular. There's a certain amount of erraticness to it. But you do see a small peak around 5,300 years ago. And it was enough to do some small effects to climate. For example, in Peru, in the Andes, they found, there's a glacier there in the mountain.
Right.
And they found plant material flat that had been flash frozen to the point it was like perfectly preserved in the ice, as if a sudden hailstorm had buried this. And that was about the same time you had the case of the Iceman in the Alps.
And is this also like when they find a woolly mammoth frozen, it still has vegetation in its mouth?
Right, like the mammoths, that was a different event further back, but like they would have been buried in ice water that would have preserved them. Exactly. You found some climatic changes also occurring at that time. Now, this small event is more speculative because I don't have the astronomical data to back it up, although it's interesting you find a cosmic ray peak there. And it turns out that the Mayan calendar begins within a century of that time. Now, whether the next one is going to arrive on 2012, that would mean the Mayans had some advanced knowledge. Where did they get that knowledge?
Well, that's a good point. Hey, Paul, stay with us. We're going to take this quick break, and then we'll be right back with you. Paul's website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com right now. And I've got to tell you, as we get more into this, is absolutely startling. Next hour, as a matter of fact, with Paul, we're going to talk about his theory of pulsars, which he believes to come from extraterrestrials, a form of intergalactic communication. But for now, when we come back, we'll be talking with Paul LaViolette about his theories about Earth under fire, this cosmic wave, a couple of them, he believes, are heading this way, has no idea when they will hit. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we'll be back in a moment with our guest, Dr. Paul LaViolette, and I'm telling you, riveting, riveting work that he has done, theories and opinions. Talk about riveting, by the way. The January issue of the After Dark newsletter stacked with 2006 predictions with Sylvia Brown, Glynis McCants, Dr. Lewis Turry, Ed Dames, the Merlin Project folks, all kinds of people. Take advantage of this After Dark newsletter, because when you pick it up for a short time, you still get a free CD, an Art Bell interview with Father Malachi Martin called Perfect Possession on Exorcisms. You get the renewal or the subscription by calling 1-888-727-5505 or go online at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest, Dr. Paul LaViolette. Paul, so we don't know when this cosmic wave is heading this way, other than we know that there have been two bursts out this way. How do we know that?
Those are recorded in the ice core record. You mean about the ones coming to us?
Yeah, the two that are coming. Who knows when they'll get here?
When I say two, I mean the very, very large ones that are going to be so large that they'll change the climate. There are other smaller ones, I believe, which they're going to be strong enough to do, let's say, damage to our satellites, communication equipment. They could create effects similar to high-altitude nuclear explosion in terms of EMP, where, for example, could burn out solid-state circuits in cars and so on.
Instantly.
Right. So whatever the warnings they have for a nuclear EMP, that could occur from one of the smaller events. These are much more frequent. In fact, if you look, astronomers have looked at towards the galactic center, and they see clouds of gas that are expanding that appear to have been blown out from the core. And judging from the rate of expansion and their size, they can get dates when these puffs came out. And there appear to be 14 of these clouds or these expulsions in the last 6,000 years. And judging from these small events, you can see the spacing is an average of every 500 years. And we haven't had one for the last 700 years. So from that, you we're overdue for a small one. Now, 700 years ago, we didn't have satellites and all that. We didn't have electrical appliances. So we really wouldn't have, it wouldn't have impacted our life that much back in the days of riding horses and so on. It could be really disastrous if it happened today.
Well, Paul, this year the sun has been very active. It's not supposed to be. As a matter of fact, we're supposed to be on a downturn. But, you know, it has been very active. We've been lucky that some of these coronal mass ejections haven't been faced directly to us. We'd have some real problems. Does this cosmic wave, when it hits, does it also affect the sun? And if so, how does it?
Yes, definitely. For one thing, the dust that it pushes in would come in, sort of shroud the sunlight, would form a dust cocoon around the sun. It would also activate the sun to become more of a flaring type of star. We see stars like this. They're called T Tauri stars. They're surrounded by dust. They're similar to our sun. It's just they have a dust around them, and they're continually erupting with flares.
It looks like the stars on fire by it, literally all around it, right?
Yeah, well, it the photosphere of the star actually expands. It's become so energized. If you can imagine solar flares that are going on continuously, whereas today we have a cycle where it's not only continuous, but there's always flares on the surface of the star, and sometimes several eruptions at one time that could add up to a very large coronal mass ejection. Much more powerful, much more frequent, much more X-ray radiation being given off. This could cause, for example, geomagnetic flips when they hit.
I got to tell you too, Paul, I was amazed in the video Earth Under Fire how many mainstream scientists accept this theory of yours. They're coming on board. They're not throwing this away. They're not laughing at this. They're taking it pretty seriously, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, so far the theory has made 13 or 14 predictions, a priori predictions that were published and later verified, which is pretty good track record.
Yeah, I think so too. Do you believe that when these hit, in your opinion, it could come sooner than later? I mean, might we be, and I know you don't know the exact date here, but I mean, God willing, we're talking about thousands and thousands of years away, but my take is that you think it might happen much sooner.
Yes, I give a 90% chance it would happen in the next, let's say, 300 or 400 years.
Okay.
Which doesn't mean it might not happen 2012 or sooner. You really can only go by probabilities based on the past. What we really need is some information, let's say, suppose that there were civilizations living closer to the core, to the galactic core,
right,
that knew the time that the wave passed there, and they were able to relay to civilizations further out to know exactly when this would arrive. Really, you'd have to go to a more advanced culture out in space.
Now, how many civilizations knew about some of the past cosmic waves that practically destroyed the planet and life as they knew it at the time?
Well, you mean how many cultures or?
Yeah. I mean, we've got the Hopis as one. There were numerous ones, weren't they?
All over the planet. Virtually every culture has stories about this.
All similar stories.
Right. It's amazing. In my book, Earth Under Fire, I have a page that I list just for the flood stories, the various cultures. I don't know if I can find it right now.
Okay, and this is the flood, of course, we know in the Bible, the one that the Noah was involved in. Is that the one?
Right, yeah. In fact, there's one book that was written that they thought it was due to the Mediterranean overflowing through into the Black Sea, which would have been a very local event.
Does this cosmic wave, Paul, create a tsunami and high waves?
Yes, it would create earthquake effects. But what I was saying, that in actuality, this event of the flood was something you find in stories all over. It's not just a localized one. These are not localized myths. You find them in North America, Siberia, South America, Japan, China.
Do they all talk like the Hopis of an impending cosmic wave again?
Well, they talk about cycles. This is a theme that you find very frequently, that there are cycles of destruction which end ages. In my book, I have a whole chapter on cycles of destruction. I've studied cultures from around the world that have this theme, and they're very similar in many respects. It's just the kind of destruction that ends the age varies from one culture to another, or like, for example, in the Hopi myths or one given culture, they will have a different destruction for each cycle. But in actuality, all of these things are happening. It's not just one thing.
I've got to ask you, as we talk about the Hopi, and I don't know if you got involved in this end of it or not, Paul, but they have also drawings of what they call ant people, very similar to gray aliens that we talk about today. The large heads, the little bodies, the long fingers. Might we be talking about the same thing, extraterrestrial visitation, and the Hopis knew about this?
Well, they talk about their peoples being led by a cloud to some underground kivas to weather out the event. So this sounds a lot like Close Encounter.
Yeah, it does.
In other myths of the Hopi, they talk about it being as a light in the sky that they were following. At one point in this event, I believe it was a coronal mass ejection that hit the Earth and actually ignited the surface. You find actually a black horizon down there at a certain level, which is between what the geologists refer to as the Alarod period and Younger Dryas.
Yes.
And it's called in Europe the Ucella horizon. Geologist I met a few years back, Hans Klusterman, was researching this, and he found it all over Europe. It's actually about 10 centimeter blackened layer. And he was doing studies over here, too. He finds it in the southwest, although here geologists will just say, oh, well, that's just a mat, that black mat, maybe due to certain lichens or something that discolor it. And yet it occurs at the same boundary, at the time of the extinction of the mammals, the mastodons, and the saber-toothed tigers. We had 95% of the large animals die off in this continent at that time.
And was it instant, the die-off?
That's difficult to say, but virtually you see a termination boundary as to how long it actually took for the extinction to happen. We don't know, but in terms of geologic time, it was essentially abrupt. You did find increased mortality for the previous couple thousand years, but then there was this boundary beyond which you didn't find the bones anymore of those animals, and they're buried in flood deposits. They are also, you find them in Alaska, but there the flood deposits were frozen as tundra, so you're able to see the bodies, even the soft parts, preserved.
Paul, do you think governments are aware of this? You know, do they listen to experts like you and say, you know what, we better start developing, because we got this great technology, we better start developing some kind of shield, something to save this planet. And we're not just talking about trying to deflect, for example, an asteroid. We got to shield this planet. Do you think they're aware in doing things like that?
I don't know as far as what's happening in the classified side of things. As far as the scientific programs that are funded today, I don't see that happening. And I think what's needed is more of an awareness. It's sort of like there's a critical mass of awareness that you have to pass, and we haven't got to that point yet. Maybe your program will help. Where scientists start talking about it. There are some that have cited my papers and have written my papers where I've written about this, but it hasn't gotten to the point where it's being taught in colleges or it's part of the strategy for for FEMA and this sort of thing. It's very far from that. Even after the tsunami, on my website, I have a page where I connect the gamma ray burst with the tsunami. I believe the two were connected. They happened within 2 days of each other.
And I guess that's been documented, right? the burst, and then obviously the timing with the tsunami?
Yes, but they did not release immediately the information about the gamma ray burst. The first was the tsunami on December 26, 2004. And then about 2 days later occurred the gamma ray burst, but we didn't hear about it until middle of February, which is a pity. But anyway, once it was released, there was some discussion on the internet about somebody was asking, could these two have been related? And one of the scientists, I know NASA scientist or somebody, was saying, well, there's no way that gamma rays could have created an earthquake, and besides, it occurred afterwards. The missing link here is the gravity wave. When you get a burst like that, now, first of all, let me say that this gamma ray burst was 100 times stronger than the next strongest gamma ray burst they'd ever observed in their history.
100 times?
Right. The reason was it occurred within our galaxy, actually at about as far away as the center of the galaxy. It's really interesting that it was only about, a source that was only about 10 degrees of arc away from the center of the galaxy and about as far away. And
of course, what are the odds of it hitting us at about the same time that this earthquake / tsunami would occur? So one has to assume that there's some kind of correlation between the two.
Right. Well, the gravity wave would arrive first before the gamma rays, because the gamma rays are deflected by gravity fields and dust particles and so on. So they're going to arrive a little later. Also, there's a theory that at the time it's initially created, at the time of the initial explosion, the gravity pulse will actually be superluminal and then slow down to luminal speed. So it could actually, that part could actually get a head start, whereas gamma rays are normal electromagnetic waves. They would be going to speed of light. So you find that the largest gamma ray pulse that had ever been observed occurring 2 days after an earthquake, which was 10 times larger than the largest quake anywhere in the world to occur in the last 25 years. And that can't be just a coincidence. I did call the two gamma ray gravity wave telescopes groups. There's one that's the LIGO group here in the U.S., and there's another one in Japan. And unfortunately, neither were up and running at the time to have observed the event. So we are unable to confirm about the gravity wave. But this would explain why the events are tied together.
Well, you know, these events, these cosmic waves, have probably had such a devastating effect on the planet. I've got to ask you, do you think, if you believe Atlantis truly existed at one time, that a cosmic wave might have wiped out that continent as well?
Well, I believe that Atlantis, really what we had was a civilization, an ice age civilization. Of course, you could say that there were people at times living in caves. Of course, they had to go into caves to get shelter from this. But you would have had a civilization along the coastal areas. In fact, Graham Hancock was doing studies of Malta, for example, and they found underwater ruins in Malta, for example,
right,
that date back to the end of the Ice Age. We find stone monuments in Peru, Baalbek, in Near East, made with very large stone blocks. The question is, where did they get the technology to build these things? So you see evidence for advanced civilization living on our planet, and what's left are the stones, basically. If there was, if we were using iron, it would have rusted away. Yes, but as far as a continent like Atlantis, I don't believe that there was an island with moats and dikes around it, like Plato says, because Plato is reporting about Solon's trip to Egypt. And Solon is told by the priests there, that this myth, the story, is to be taken metaphorically.
Ah.
And okay. He gives an example there about Phaethon and the Sun Chariot. And he says, now this is told as a story, but this really is conveying about certain celestial bodies, their paths, and about a conflagration that occurred on the Earth.
Okay, stay with us, Paul. We're going to be back at the top of the hour. The talk of the galaxy, he believes that pulsars are ET messages.